What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
It's 9:37 on this Friday morning, and I'm delighted to say now that Vinny Perth, former Dundalk boss, joins us on the line. Morning, Vinny. I think you're with us anyway. I think we have a slight connection there, but we'll. You have us, have you?
Yeah, have you, sir.
Good man, good stuff. You were on with the lads during the week, and I watched it back yesterday. It was an illuminating conversation about tactics and systems and how players fit into that. So, 90 minutes later, 120 minutes later, what are you thinking now?
Yeah, I was listening to the discussion earlier on with Gary and David, and I know Owen said he was sick of it at this stage, so I hope I didn't bore him too much yesterday, the tactical nerd in me. But I think we've seen our system play out in the sense of somebody putting a real structure on our team. So you're probably come away from the game like a lot of people with a real sense of disappointment and a real opportunity was missed. But at the same time, for me, I think we've got to be very balanced about this, that we are here, we are in that situation for a reason. We've failed to qualify. I think there's 50 odd teams and 24 of them will go through. So the likes of an average enough Northern Ireland and Scotland, and fair play to them, are still in the competition. I think this is only now the start of the Stephen Kenny regime, and we've seen some real positives in the way the system and the way the players have been allowed to play. Someone like Alan Brown and what he done yesterday on the pitch, a certain amount of Irish fans wouldn't, because he doesn't play in the Premiership, wouldn't know that much about Alan Brown, but he came on and looked a real hell of a player because the systems, the freedom for footballers to play was given to them last night in a big stage. Same with Callum Robinson. It's arguably he hasn't done that much for Ireland, and I thought yesterday, again, he was very, very good. So the manager's obviously learned, and the staff have learned from the first two games, and they're slowly building towards putting a really effective team on the pitch, I feel. So real positives from last night, but same time, it feels like a real missed opportunity.
Definitely. For the record, I'm not sick at all of hearing the tactical chat. It's just Doherty versus Coleman, considering we've had it so often. In fact, the number 10 conversation we had yesterday morning was really interesting, Vinny. And it kind of turned out that position ended up being relatively important. Could you talk to us about how Ireland used that attacking midfield area on the pitch last night?
Yeah, it was interesting. Look, I'm reluctant to be any way, shape, form critical of Jeff Hendrick in terms of how he played yesterday. But he's played a lot of his career as a 10. Then he went to Burnley, and Burnley's style doesn't suit a number 10. So he hasn't played that position a hell of a lot over the last couple of years. You've seen him getting goal for Newcastle. But I suppose if you imagine Ireland with, say, Hamsik in that number 10 role last night, you remember some of the passes in behind Matt Doherty, some of his just selection of passes, finding a little pocket. We're crying out for that, and that's what I seen yesterday. But again, what also the system or having a number 10 allowed happen is allowed your fullbacks be a little bit higher up the pitch, and we've seen that with Doherty and Stevens being able to join in more. It also, I think losing Connolly was a big blow. There's no doubt he would have started. We've seen Callum Robinson and Connolly both playing sort of these inverted wingers. I'm not trying to equate the Ireland performance to Liverpool, but very similar to what McGoldrick does coming off that position as the centre forward, Firmino, and allowing the two other guys become centre forwards at times, like Mane and Salah, and we had that opportunity to do that. And it's a real interesting way of playing, and it's exciting. And but you need to have control in midfield, and that's where the 2-6s really kicked in. And you come off that pitch going, was James McCarthy's performance much better than what is in the first games? It wasn't overly, in terms of he's not a ball playing centre half, he's not someone who's going to dictate the pace of the game, but having someone alongside him meant he was really, really effective. And I thought Conor Hourihan's performance was outstanding at times. So his range of passing, his want to get on the ball meant that the structure of Ireland's team was really exciting. And I said it yesterday, I think we're short of a number 10. And it's real, real obvious that we are. But at the same time, it doesn't mean that we just give up and we don't play that way. But we try and find one, and we're patient. And unfortunately, we live in an instant world. But when you look at someone like Troy Parrott coming through, will he be that number 10 we need? I think he will be. But he's still a couple of maybe 18 months away from being an absolute starter for Ireland, unless his form takes off for Millwall in the next short period. So real signs that the staff, the manager has decided we've a way of playing. They fixed some of the issues after looking at the first couple of games, and that's what you want. So the wholesale changes from where we were and why we're in this position. So they shouldn't be just judged on one game, but real progress last night. And I think you're seeing sort of some of the stuff we were discussing yesterday morning play out on the pitch, which was real interesting.
Definitely. And does the lack of a number 10 on the pitch, does that influence the role of David McGoldrick at all, him dropping deeper? Like, if there's number 10 on the pitch, is David McGoldrick in a much more advanced position? Because he was amazing last night. He was absolutely sensational, but half of his play came from dropping a lot deeper.
Yeah, he was, in one sense, he was the best player on the pitch. I was really impressed by Hourihan, for argument's sake. Thought he was his range of passing, just because Hourihan's position was a little bit different than Villa. He plays sort of in a one and a two. But McGoldrick was outstanding. But the problem was, he wasn't a real goal threat for a large period of the game. And that's fine. If your two inverted wingers, as we say, Robinson, and if it's Conley, can create chances, or in time it's Troy Parrott, Adele, all these people. It makes his role really important to come in, pick out passes, all of that stuff. I heard the discussion earlier on, probably would side with Gary Breen in the sense of that's his best position, starting as a number nine coming in. But at the same time, I would back David Moyler's call to say, we've got to, in a friendly, maybe try him in the number 10 position with a Conley, I would say, as opposed to an Ida, because just because of the structure of the team, once you play Ida, his job is to go and stretch it, play into his feet, and people play off. But him, I'd love to see Conley and McGoldrick play together in that 10 position. But again, and you've seen it with Jeff Hendrick at times, Hourihan joined in, and Hendrick in the 10 has to make a recovery run, and that's what keeps you solid. And we were much more solid yesterday than we have been in the first couple of games in that shape. And so there's all these things that Stephen and the staff will look at after the game, and they've got to learn from. But real signs of progression, real signs of we're getting players that people thought couldn't play. And as I said, the average fan probably thought Alan Brown was just an average enough footballer playing in the Championship. I think he showed, for example, last night that with real strength and depth in the Irish squad, we've got players that this 4-2-3-1 suits. We've also got players that 3-5-2 suits, ironically. But the amount of information, the amount of knowledge that the players took onto the pitch tells you that there's buy-in from the players. They want this change. And the manager and the rest of the staff were obviously giving them the right information. So it's been a productive couple of weeks. And I think for me, Stephen's campaign only starts now.
The McGoldrick number 10 one was definitely one of the kind of interesting ones, Vinny, wasn't it? And it's got a load of interaction from people watching us this morning and during the week as well. This one from Dave B, I think, is an interesting point on that specifically. He talks about the defensive role to the number 10. Yes. He says he should be marking the opposite number 6 when they have the ball. He wonders if McGoldrick has the legs for that extra defensive running in midfield. Is that how you see the role?
Absolutely. That's the modern day number 10 now, has to, in many ways, cover the biggest amount of distance on the pitch. So if you get the GPS report from yesterday, I would say to you that Jeff Hendrick probably covered the most distance for Ireland. And this is just off my own eyes, so I wouldn't be privy to the GPS report. And I would imagine, and it's not just measured on distance, okay? It's measured on high-speed running. So I would say to you that Jeff Hendrick probably covered the biggest distance or the most high-speed running alongside Conor Hourihan. And when you play a 4-2-3-1 system, that's generally what happens. So to ask McGoldrick to go and do that number 10 role, I don't think he can do it in that same. He can probably do it at home against a team that we're going to dominate the ball against, maybe. But in a top international game, you need someone who has real running power to do that role. And like I said yesterday, it's not a centre. It's not the old Teddy Sheringham role. And that's where people get confused with it. It's completely different in modern day football. It's high speed running that's needed in that area. And you look at the very best team at the moment, it's Liverpool, and the amount of running that, you know, Jordan Henderson do if he was to play in there, or Wijnaldum, Keita, it's really, there's a lot. Yeah. There's a lot of that role. So it's not necessarily centre forward that can do it. But again, if you've loads of possession, it can be tried, and it is a go-to in certain games when you're looking to score goals. So again, we're caught in a dilemma because he was our best player on the pitch yesterday, but he wasn't really a goal threat, and that's the problem. And that's the problem. Conley was a big miss, I felt, last night. Someone that is in real hot form in the Premiership and may have given us an opportunity to score a goal.
Yeah, the it struck me as you were talking about the role, Vinny, that maybe some of it goes against David McGoldrick given his age profile, particularly in back-to-back games. But like, are you saying that, because you touched on it there at the end, that actually it's something you flit in and out of during games, or actively that's actually his role for the game? Because some of it, like particularly in terms of the legs and stuff like that, would go against him, and particularly in relation to back-to-back games, obviously with a view to the Wales game this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, he plays in a two in his club. Like, the number 10 role now, it's just different. It's not, as I said to you, it's not a centre forward able to drop in. Some centre forwards can do it if they're really athletic. And I think McGoldrick is quite a fit lad, and 32 isn't that old anymore. He looks after himself, I imagine, especially with the modern day technology at his club. But I think it's probably more designed in time to somebody along the lines of a Parrott or somebody in that sort of different style, maybe. And Parrott is more of a centre forward, but he's someone who definitely we've seen at the 21s can do that role quite well. So, it's more of a midfield role, the number 10, than a striker's role, if that makes sense, in the modern game. We just don't have the 10. I mean, you look at Wales a few years ago getting to semis of the Euros. They built a great team. They had a lot of players on the fringe, the Premiership, Championship players. But they ultimately had a Gareth Bale, a Matt Winner, someone that would turn magic on. You look at Sweden, they've had Ibrahimovic. You look at teams around Europe, international teams. You even look at Slovakia last night. They had got that bit of quality in Hamsik. We're probably missing that little bit of quality in that number 10 position. Someone that scores a free kick, changes a game for you. Like last night, a free kick, or they defended set pieces brilliantly, zonally. But we're probably missing that one little bit of magic in that sort of, and I would say probably in the number 10 role now, that takes us to another level, or makes us able to compete against a lot of the top teams.
One other thing then, Vinny, is on the defence last night. If you want to make this argument that Ireland were much better than Slovakia last night, it must be a little bit of a concern that they still created a number of really good opportunities and could have been 2-0 up. Is there a quick fix there? Do you think that there should be a quick fix there? Or is that just par for the course when we are starting to play with a lot of cohesion going forward?
Yeah, I suppose the answer is yes and no. Sometimes if you're going to be attack minded, you're going to get your fullbacks on. Like, Doherty can be, in one sense, an old fashioned coach would be looking at Doherty going, why can't he tackle? Why doesn't he? You know, he doesn't show real aggression from a defensive point of view. But you get the other side of it where he's going to create a goal, it looks like, or he's going to score a goal. And I'm fascinated to see his relationship with Mourinho develop. But, like, for example, they nearly scored two goals from set pieces. Okay, so what will happen is they will watch those two chances over the weekend from the back of the goal with a different camera. And they'll see why they structurally set up correctly or incorrectly, and they'll fix it. And it's a bit like fixing of the 4-2-3-1 system. This is all going to involve, like, for example, I'd imagine Ireland having worked in an attack and throw. They've probably thrown one into the players at different stages. Again, we're becoming a team, and they need time to become a team. They've only had 3 matches and a couple of hours contact. They can't do everything. People say, what do you mean an international team haven't worked on a throw? But it doesn't happen that quickly. It takes time to develop. It takes time for, you know, it might take 15, 20 minutes over the weekend to go through maybe a throw-in now that they fix some of the other stuff in terms of how they want to play. So there is concern, but, I mean, it's big boy football. You're playing against some top players. It's and opposition are going to get some chances. But by and large, I think Irish fans would wonder, I'd rather win 4-3 than draw nil all or not having a go. And if they score 2, then we have to look at scoring 3. And I think that's the philosophy now that's coming into the group, that let's go and outscore our opposition and create loads of chances. And I think it's worth it. I think it's worth the ride. And I think the big issue for me now is looking ahead to next week. Is there pressure on that staff? Because they've lost the game. They haven't qualified for the Euros. There shouldn't be. We need to back this new group and give them time to develop all of these things we've been talking about.
Vinny, thanks a million.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot. Illuminating stuff again from Vinny Perth there at 5 to 10 on this Friday morning. By the way, just a note to let you know that the Irish Wheelchair Association has had to regrettably cancel its annual street collection because of the COVID pandemic, naturally enough. And the charity is, however, appealing to the public to continue to support its appeal online. And you can get involved and you can make a donation through its website. It's iwa.ie. Just jump on there and make your donation, iwa.ie. Right, 5 to 10, squeezed on time, and no better position to be in to introduce Nathan Murphy to the show. Morning, Nathan. He's there. He's not there. He's getting himself set up. He's making himself beautiful. He's putting on his makeup.
I'm here. I was listening to you on, I was tuned in on YouTube, Adrian. So I was like, whoa, that's a bit worrying that you left it late.
We've 5 minutes for you.
Okay.
What are your?
I thought you were a bit down this morning. You were a bit despondent, Adrian.
Here he is. He's on Twitter last night, seeking out the negativity. He's managing to twist my take on the game to be that it was some way down to try and twist a narrative here to, Nathan Murphy comes to riding to the rescue of the public to defend Stephen Kenny's boys in green. That's what we're dealing with here, I think.
Can I just interject to set the scene here, Nathan? You tweeted last night to say that you were a bit shocked to see the negativity around the Ireland performance. Thought they played as well as they have in years, getting better as the game went on. So many signs of progress. Shame they aren't arriving to Euro 2020 off the back of 10 or 12 games. The replies are telling, Nathan, as ever. One person says, but you and the ODB boys told us that Stephen Kenny was the next Pep. Slovakia are a poor team and we're missing some of their better players, and we still failed to beat them. Kenny will be gone after the World Cup qualifying group after we failed to qualify for the World Cup. Another person says, off the ball have been peddling this idea for a long time amongst utter nonsense. No logical reason for Kenny to have been given this job. Another person says, it was never going to be as amazing as you guys have built it up to be. If there are so many signs of progress, how come we were so bad in our last game against the mighty Finland? Maybe we just don't have the players. Irish soccer hacks stuck in a bubble. And then finally, one other person says, there goes another Kenny cheerleader because it's cool to support the LOI guy. Can't just imagine your reaction to losing to a shit team if it was Trapp, O'Neill, or Mick in charge. Respond, Nathan.
Like, who's worse? Anti-vaxxers are the OTB peddlers of pro-Kenny. Absolute bias. Yeah.
There's the headline right there.
I don't think we ever said that Ireland will get to Pep Guardiola, but I think what we thought Ireland would get to is what we saw last night, and that is the start of it. Remember, Stephen Kenny had any amount of time to plan for this match, but he'd little or no preparation with the players on the training ground. So to get that type of performance where they took their opportunities to get on the ball, to do the right thing, to hold on to possession, to build attacks in open play, to create chances in open play, that's what we want. I think when we talk about what Stephen Kenny can do and change Irish football, for me, there's a top 10 in European football, there's a bottom 10, the minnows, and there's probably about 35 teams in between, which Ireland are part of that. And what I want to see is Ireland perform home and away like they did last night against those teams, which is get on the ball, do the right thing, play a modern brand of football, press high up the pitch, get turnover ball, which I've never seen an Irish team win the ball back more often than in midfield and in the opposition half than they did last night. And that's what you see among the best teams in Europe, in the world. I'm not comparing Ireland to any of those right now, but that is the way modern football is played. And at full time and at the 120 minutes, you are looking and thinking, "Pooh, it's a very condensed calendar. If you get this group of players together for 10, 12 games between now and next summer, and you win the penalty shootout, well, what sort of level can they get to?" And it's just so depressing and disappointing that they're not going to have that opportunity. And they sort of have to somehow start all over again against Wales on Sunday, when I'd imagine pretty much all the team is going to be changed, are going to have to be changed, for a game that has importance because there's ranking points, there's a draw for the World Cup qualifiers taking place next month. Ireland, as it stands, are probably going to be third seed unless they can win a couple of games over the next month. But I thought that was everything we could have expected for Stephen Kenny after three games. And I think it ends any of the talk about respecting the dressing room, having an impact. Like, that's done. We know now that actually he's on the right track. The shame is that it's going to be probably a year, 2 years before we actually see where it takes Ireland in terms of the competitive qualification.
Yeah, definitely moves forward. Ultimately, the same result. Like Lee Ruttle here on Twitter, same old story. Can't win games without goals. And like the system is, look at, absolutely, there's no point in saying otherwise. You're watching that game last night and we saw Ireland play a bit of football, and that's a fantastic thing to be able to watch, like ball to feet, bit of control about the game. Yes, maybe caught a little bit on the hop, and maybe we'll get caught a bit on the hop on the counter at times when we're pressing on like that. The results are going to have to start to come at some point, though, aren't they? Like, we can't trundle on like this.
But trundle on like what? It's three games in. Another thing we can do after last night is write off the first two matches, because all the concerns that were there about us being exposed defensively, I think we saw the players weren't fully fit for the first two games. Goals are going to have to come. And looking at it again, the last 3 years, Ireland have played 17 competitive games. They've scored 10 goals in those 17 competitive games over 3 years. Shane Duffy's the only player to score more than one goal. So getting the ball in the back of the net is going to be a big issue. But that hopefully is where those younger emerging talents come through. Adam Eda and Aaron Connolly, like, what a mess that turned out to be. Troy Power took back in. Jason Malumbi. We haven't seen that new generation. That was, in many ways, some of the old guard still there playing in a new system. But they're the players that are going to have to score the goals. There ain't no Robbie Keane coming through. There is never going to be another Robbie Keane in terms of that amount of goals. But the goals should come from everywhere. The goals should come from all around the park. And the more chances you create, the more of them you're going to take. But, yeah, it's very, very disappointing and depressing. But I think when you look at the 11 that started, it's very hard to find a player who didn't perform last night. Maybe Matt Doherty in the first half, the first hour of the game, looked a little bit off it. But that was the best 45 minutes we've seen Jeff Hendrick play in an Irish jersey since Euro 2016. Vinny touched on the amount of ground he covered, the bit of freedom in front of the two in McCarthy and Howerhan. Like, that's what you want from Jeff Hendrick. If he can get that in every game, he's going to start every game. It is just finding that finishing touch. And you were looking with 10 minutes to go. I know Connolly would have started, but thinking, if you have Connolly and Eda on the bench now to bring that sort of pace, what a difference it could have made. And I'm going to be interested to see what the fallout is like over the next 24, 48 hours. It's hard to apportion blame because, listen, it's a very difficult scenario. But when you are down to a player sitting within 10 centimetres, could the plane have been divvied up? I would ask, in the circumstances, should they have maybe had two separate flights? And then you would get into, well, can the FAI afford two separate flights because of everything that's happened in the previous regime over previous years? Yeah. And unfortunately, that's what happens here. So I would be wary of pushing blame too far on the arrangements that were made. you would have to assume and hope, and we'll find out more, that the proper precautions were in place, but clearly something went wrong, that a player had to be within 2 metres.
Yeah, well, they weren't in place is the point. And like, I think that the FAI have to take that one on the chin, that like they have to be responsible for the logistics around COVID. And it's an awful lesson to have to learn.
Well, absolutely. But how do you, if you are bringing players and backroom staff and management and everybody else on the same flight, there's only a certain amount of seats. There's only so many 2 metres you can have. So somebody's going to have to sit close to somebody.
There are definitely options. I just think that, like, you find yourself in a plane. It's the Clifton conversation. You rock into the hotel and you realise, no, this isn't necessarily the place I want to be. And then you come up with an alternative plan.
But what I'm saying is, they may well have liked to have had an alternative plan, but the FAI is in a dire financial state, and to have a second flight simply may not have been possible.
Yeah, Nathan, good man.
Cheers, lads.
OTB. AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.